Blog Talk Radio.
Out here in the perimeter, there are no stars. Out here, we are stone, immaculate.
Now listen to this.
Funky edition of Summertime Radio here with your host, Dr. Mark Filippi. The Blog Talk Radio platform is having one of its typical evenings of dementia. So I'm going to try and steer around that and ignore it, at least for the most part, and see if we can get through the evening unscathed. Good guest tonight coming up, Dr. Robert O. Young, about 10 minutes. Got lots to talk about, lots to discuss as it comes to nutrition, because getting close to that full-born summertime flavor out there, and, you know, I wanted to get him on because a couple months ago we had Denise Marion from Organic Avenue, and she's going to be sponsoring and, I think, feeding everyone that goes to his workshop this weekend in New York City, so I wanted to make sure we got him on to promote that and discuss his methods because they are, as they say, unusual in the scheme of things when it comes to diet and lifestyle. So along those lines, I want to start the festivities off with a little music from the King, if we could. The Napster Maestro, if would you please. Just a little taste. Get us going. Opening media, connecting to media. All this media, it's making me mental. And of course, it's my computer, so we have that aspect of it as well. If it worked, then it wouldn't be mine. So, any second now, the King, to get us going here. Any second now. You know, if I did the properly prepared to do this show, this wouldn't happen. Oh, it's buffering. King, from the movie 3,000 Miles to Graceland, if you want to check out one of these rare cable movies that repeated about 3,000 times, usually in the wee hours, lovely flick with Kurt Russell and Kevin Costner. So there we are. So, okay, so it looks like we got a whole host of people on the line here. So I don't know which one of them is the guest, but we're not there yet. So if you're waiting on hold, just bear with me here. We're going to get through some news. We have sort of a senator's gone wild situation going on down in Washington, D.C. We have not one but two scandals down there. Let me just see if I can get my system to work this even just remotely for 2 minutes. And we will partake of a little review of our SAPES in action down there in D.C. You know, a lot of stuff on Obama this week and everything going on in Iran. I don't know about you, but it seems like a bait and switch is going on down there, okay? We've had nothing but economy talk, and I haven't even mentioned the swine friend yet. Maybe we'll get to that with our guest. But the thing is that if you think of the country in terms of its immune system, you know, to noise, one of the biggest things is celebrity scandal. And now the senators have sort of leapfrogged over the Hollywood types in getting themselves into these dilemmas. And I, the Argentinian thing, I don't know, maybe someone can enlighten me on this, I don't know. I just get fascinated with the elaborate attempts to circumvent the all-seeing, all-knowing eye of the media when it comes to these things. And I'm just fascinated to see how it goes from here, because we've had so many cases in the last year and a half or so of the scandals down there that I don't know. Maybe we're getting a little world weary of it. Maybe just a tad. And my computer is not cooperating, so I'm going to just skip this. So if you've been paying attention to the Twitter revolution, that's the other thing that's been going on that I'm kind of curious about. See how you feel about that. All the information that's been traveling back and forth in and out of Iraq today, they're actually arresting the reporters down there and detaining them. So there's just a lot. Like I said, we're really living in some funky, funky times. Pay attention, because things are about to really change. The one thing I did want to get to before we got on the air with our guests is this new movie called Food, Inc. Now, a couple weeks ago, we had the privilege to talk to Douglas Rushkoff in his book, Life, Inc., which dealt with this corporatism that's gone on. Now, here's a perfect example of corporatism when it comes to this scandal that really rivals the tobacco industry, really, is the way that food is being governed, if you will, in this country. And then maybe we'll get into that a little bit with our guest as well. So a couple things I wanted to get to here. We got a couple minutes. I just wanted to track that on you. But if you haven't heard, anyone heard about the movie Food, Inc., just be sure to chime in later. We'll get on that, see if you understand it. So there we go. So then the South Carolina Governor Mark Sanford, amidst the recent mystery trip, was about a visit to his mistress in Argentina. Oh, boy. Who's going to play her in the movie? I don't know if Madonna will be available at that point. I'm just trying to see if there's any swine flu talk that I missed before we get on the air, because I love to track the swine friend each week here on the program, just to see if there's anything new, because, you know, it's the pandemic. Run for your lives. Well, when you get to this point in the year, we're kind of a little socially saturated, so I forgive you if you're a little war-weary of these stories, but I have to cover them here in summertime because it's what's in our heads, and what's in our heads eventually ends up in our bodies. So I got a lot of people on the line here. I don't know which one of them is calling from for the guest, but I'm going to take a random shot at an 801 area code and just see what you got to say before we get on the air. So, hello, you're on the air sometime, Dr. Mark. How can I help you? Hello? Anybody there?
Hi.
Hi. You calling summertime? You got a question or something? Do you want to get to Dr. Young, or you want to go back on hold? Or
we just want to listen to the show.
Oh, okay. I'll put you back on hold, and you guys can enjoy it, all right? Hang on one second.
All right.
Okay, there you go. And let's just check these other guys. I'm just going to, I don't know who they are. But let's go the other direction here and see if we can find out if Dr. Young is calling in. You know, not the number I called him on. And we'll see. All right, we're checking in here. Oh, wait, that must be him. Okay. All right, so without further ado, because the lines are all flogged and busy here. Let's get the We have the, at least famous on this show, Dr. Robert O. Young calling in from D.C. I didn't realize there was going to be so many people calling before you got on the air, but welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure to be on your program.
Yeah, well, it's going to be funky tonight because there's all kinds of spyware up here in the Blog Talk platform. So hopefully, if for some reason we get disconnected, just call back in. Sometimes they get a lot of activity at night, and the server will get a little saturated. But we should be okay, I guess.
Okay.
All right, I'm just going to see if these other guys here that are called, I just want to see if we can open some lines up. If they had any questions right away, we wanted to get to so we could free them up. So we'll just get them on here. Okay. Area code 435. Go ahead. Are you there to listen, or you have a question?
To listen.
Just to listen?
To listen.
Okay, enjoy the show.
Thank
Hang on.
You.
Okay, we got another People listening on the phone instead of on the internet. That's fine. All right, and let's see. 435 area code again. Do you have a question for Dr. Young that we want to get to right away? Hello?
Hello?
Yes, hi. Do you have a question for Dr. Young?
No, I'm just listening.
You guys are just listening. Does anyone have a computer? Okay. Because we want to free some lines up to get people to call in during the show. If you don't have a question, you can go listen online, you know, and stream it. But I'll leave you up there.
Okay,
hey, hang on. Hang on. All right, I better open up the chat room because you guys are all over the place here. All right, looks like we got one guy that dropped off one of his computers. We want to keep at least one line open for questions to come in. All right, sorry about that, Dr. Young. We had some house cleaning to do here. I guess I want to start off right off the bat with how much, on a scale of 1 to 10, you've been doing this work for a long time. On a scale of 1 to 10, when you introduced this model to just the I hate to say it, garden variety mainstream scientist, not even nutritionist, just a mainstream scientist, on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird do you seem to them? How you know, left field do you seem to them?
You mean 10 being the weirdest? And,
yeah, 10 being Martian, yeah.
Yeah. I would think that they would see me quite eccentric and quite off the wall and in some cases just, you know, maybe off the cliff, so to speak. I mean,
okay,
they
don't look at it as...
They wouldn't think of me inside the box. They'd think of my work outside the box.
Mm-hmm. And you did it the conventional way. You know, the quote I have up here on the show here from Dr. Sabato, or I guess that's the way you pronounce his name,
yeah,
from Washington
Dr.
University.
Sabato, yeah.
Yeah, Sabato, okay. Is that, you know, you got 3 doctoral degrees, 5 degrees in science, looked at 500,000 blood slides of people with serious health challenges, and yet you're still considered weird. I just don't know if what the mainstream's managed to push through and establish in the culture has gone through that type of scientific, battlefield to get their methods established. It's always strange to me how someone who does some really difficult, very, incredibly complex work is always looked at as the odd.
You still there? Hello? Hello?
Okay, I'm back.
Okay, good.
Wow, I told you it's going to be funky here. Sorry about that. I was the one that got knocked off this time instead of you.
I understand.
Well, it's the power to be.
You were talking about traditional science versus, I guess...
Yeah, when people come across your work, and first of all, you know, just the fact that you're talking about things that are related to health and well-being, you're going to get some ears to go up anyway. But when people discuss... You know, the fact that it isn't just diet that you're talking about. This is a whole lifestyle, and you know, you've really gotten to the point now where you know, I think you're showing up on more radars than maybe other people are aware of that do other types of things along the same line. So why don't we get a little bit of a summary of what the alkaline lifestyle is, or as you call it, I can't even pronounce it. I'm going to screw it up. Alkavarian?
Alkalarian. I mean,
Alkalarian. Okay,
yeah,
I'll be okay.
You know, there's vegetarians, there's,
there's vegans. We discussed
with
Denise, yeah.
Yeah, it's a whole different level of focus that even goes beyond raw food. It's not, you know, I mean, with what Denise does, which is wonderful, it's not only just looking at raw food, but looking at the food that is organic and raw or live but also it's actually good for you. I mean, there are foods that are raw that aren't good for you, that are acidic forming and create contributions to the body that are actually going to pull energy rather than contribute energy to the body, because that's really foundationally why we eat food, other than the social aspects of it, the community and, you know, the connections that we have with food. But all of us eat because we have this perception that we need food in order to survive. We need it for energy and to make our bodies function properly.
Well, give me an example of an acid-producing raw food that maybe people don't know of, and they think they're doing something healthy, and actually they're not.
Well, one of the biggest ones would be raw chocolate.
Okay.
Another one would be vinegar. Another one would be soy sauce. Another one would be honey. Another one would be pineapple, orange juice, pineapple juice. It could be raw. It could be fresh juice. It could be apple juice, for that matter. It could be an orange that you eat, or even, you know, more acidic, which would be a banana. They say, well, it's raw. It doesn't mean necessarily it's good for you. You know, so it's mm-hmm. there's more to this this whole etiology than just eating raw, eating organic. It's eating raw, organic, and also taking it another step further is this food actually going to make energy contribution? Is it alkalizing? As well as is it going to contribute hydroxyl ions, or is it going to contribute electrons, which is really what our body runs on? It, you know, we have this notion that our body needs calories, but it doesn't run on calories. It runs on electricity, and then the form of electricity, just like our cell phones run on electricity. It has a battery that stores that energy, and that energy is in the form of electrons, which when used up, that battery needs to be recharged. No different than us. Our bodies, our cells, hold on to electrical energy or potential. In this case, we refer this as biophotons. These biophotons can be obtained by, you know, basking in the sun, by absorbing light, which then is absorbed and stored in our cells as biophotons. And then when we need energy, we pull off those biophotons for energy. Now, in the production of utilization of energy, and any physicist knows this, is that energy is never lost, it's never gained, it just changes its form.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, one of the byproducts of energy consumption is a new product, which is an acid. So, you know, these acids or protons, you might say, if not properly eliminated through the four channels of elimination, which would be urination, perspiration, defecation, and perspiration, if it's not properly eliminated, then it gets stored in our bodies, and this is what makes us sick and tired. So we have to have the ability to absorb biophotons or energy, and then we have to be able to release the byproducts of that energy consumption or conversion of energy in order to operate our bodies. We have to be able to eliminate it, much like a car consuming gasoline and having an exhaust system and its ability to remove its own metabolic waste products in the form of course, in this case, the car, carbon monoxide. So, you know, one of our waste products, of course, everyone knows, is carbon dioxide. But simple test in point, if you hold your breath, if you don't, you know, release that carbon dioxide, you'll pass out, and of course, you can die from the inability to remove that carbon dioxide. In the same sense, that same carbon dioxide is used in our body to make alkalizing compounds such as sodium bicarbonate. And so, you know, it's not all wasted where, you know, we think, okay, carbon dioxide has to be released as a waste product, but in reality, 90% of the carbon dioxide the body uses actually is used to alkalize our bodies. So it's converted by the body, and of course that requires energy, which produces more acid. So it's a constant, continual round that we go through in order for our bodies to function. Energy consumption, energy consume, energy consumption, and energy releases or excretions, and the conversion of some of that energy into different forms. And this is something that's not, unfortunately, very well understood by most people on the planet, other than we kind of talk around it a little bit. But you know, when you originally started this conversation as it relates to how people view me, particularly in the science community, the biggest problem is in this paradigm shift, because this whole problem began over 100 years ago with Louis Pasteur and this germ theory, and we're still talking about germs causing disease, which is old biology. New biology is germs don't cause disease. They're just the expression of an over-acidic body and the body's inability to remove its own waste products. But
just to jump in for a second, they used to talk about an opportunistic infection. Like when you had, like when someone had candidiasis or someone had even just a simple cold, they would say, well, it's an opportunistic infection, which meant that the chemical environment changed to allow these things to overproliferate, and then they would say, okay, now you've got an opportunistic infection, and they were more concerned about the secondary infection. And now you've got a situation where they're trying to inoculate people with artificial, you know, with vaccines, whatever, and prophylactic versions of the drugs, which only just compounds the problem. It's almost as if they have the same facts as you, but they conclude completely different things from those facts, and they take the same actions. And what happens is that it perpetuates the problem, and then so instead of having something that is relatively self-limiting, it becomes something that's unstable. And how do you feel? I mean, when you watch the news go by, when I had Denise on, I asked her about, you know, when you see this widespread sort of fear-mongering panic about the swine flu.
Right.
How do you feel about that as a scientist saying that they're doing it again, and people, don't they know the things that you know, the things that you just said should not be uncommon knowledge? You're saying it's uncommon knowledge even among the experts.
Well, unfortunately, in the world population, 90% of the people don't know, and 7 to 8% of the people think they know but don't know. That leaves probably 1 or 2% that really know but don't know they know, which leaves probably 0.5% that actually know that they know. And, you know, so it's a
wow.
Really,
I'm lucky I'm talking to you because you know all that and that.
Yeah, so, I mean, you're talking about a world population that doesn't know, and so they believe anything they read in the paper or they see on the news, and how does that make me feel? It makes me feel sad. It makes me feel sad. You know, it used to make me feel mad, but it makes me more anxious to be able to help more people and to get this message out as quickly as possible, because the focus is on a fired gun is not the smoke, it's the person pulling the trigger, and we're not focused on the trigger, which is really a metaphor for lifestyle and dietary choices. Current medical science is focused on the smoke that's really the germs, you know, and trying to, you know, somehow mediate or buffer the smoke, when in reality, you know, the bullet's been fired, which is the acid that actually creates the damage, and we need to be focusing on prevention, which is really the cure for whatever ails you, because, you know, I mean, and prevention means a lot of different things to a lot of people. For people in Washington, it means more vaccinations, more control. It means more health insurance, more medication. But we don't need more medication. We need education. And we need to empower the people to understand how to take care of their bodies, how to maintain the alkaline design of their bodies. I mean, that's the foundational premise of my research, is the human body is alkaline by design and acidic by function. So all functions of the body are producing acids. And how's the body dealing with that? And what are we doing on a daily basis to manage the alkaline design of our body? Are we exercising? Are we hydrating properly? Because 70 to 80% of the population on this planet deal with dehydration. And you know, if you lose 1% of your water, I mean, you start getting, you know, sick and tired. You know, just 1%, just a 1% drop. And a lot of people don't realize not just the water, but the kind of water people are drinking. So it's water, it's exercise. And there's really water everywhere, but not a drop to drink. I mean, not an alkaline drop to drink. You can go anywhere on this planet Earth, and you cannot find healthy water. It's not in the store. It's nowhere to be found. It doesn't exist anymore. So, I mean, you literally, people are put in a position, and they don't know this. You know, they think that, you know, buying bottled water and you know, billions of dollars of this is being sold every year, it's no better than what's coming out of the tap. And yet, you know, this whole program is designed, you know, for corporations, you know, that are selling water to make money, and
mm-hmm.
you know, they're trying to, you know, the perception is, well, I'm buying a better product. But you know, if you test the pH, if you test the microclustering, if you test the oxidative reduction potential or the ORP or the energy potential of the water, it's no better than what's coming out of the tap. You know, so there's people just don't know, and that's 90% of the population. So when someone starts talking about swine flu, and then all of a sudden from one step to the next step, which is going to be mandatory, you know, vaccinations, you know, for an illusionary pandemic that's probably killed a few hundred people, of which out of that few hundred people, most of them had pre-existing conditions anyway from acidic lifestyle and dietary choices. So we might as well throw them into the mix and say, geez, it must have been swine flu, because we need something to validate our pandemic and to validate the fact we're going to try to exercise unrighteous dominion on the world's population by mandating vaccinations for swine flu, which contain upteen number of different toxic ingredients such as formaldehyde and thimerosal and you know attenuated byproducts of different
yeah.
animal parts. I mean,
it's more about preserving the vaccine than the human they're trying to save. I mean, I just looked online and that they're going to be testing it, requiring people to have a certificate saying they do not have swine flu at this sporting event next month in Serbia, World University Games. So this is now getting to the point now where this mindset, as you're talking about, is starting to get into the mainstream life. And it basically, you know, they already had in China with the airport situation, and Mexico, of course, their tourism has been impacted by this. And you know, it was fighting words, calling it an illusionary pandemic. And you, like I said, I don't know what ear you'd have to get, because the big fish, like the CDC, WHO, they wouldn't accept your research as valid. They wouldn't accept.
Well, they won't
your,
accept
your,
it
you know,
because I'm not one of their advertisers.
Right. I mean, this is like,
you know,
if I
was spending $1 million or more every month on their channel, they'd listen to me really quick.
Uh huh.
Because
your solutions are much more practical and inexpensive, and they go to the heart of the problem. So I'm not sure if even given a flat playing field, that would be something they would take to, because if it's all about profiteering, it's all about taking advantage of. Even if they know, would they do different? Even if they had, you know, every reason in the world to do what you're doing, would they then say, you know, well, we're going to sacrifice, you know, the money and the greed for the benefits of that would have for the individuals? But as more people become aware of this, do you see down the line, especially with this new movie Food Inc.? And in case you guys just tuned in, we're talking with Dr. Robert Young. You could jump in the chat room if you want to get a question in. We're going to be taking some questions, at least some of them from people hanging on the line. Because the stuff you're talking about, it's so difficult for people, and the explanation you gave was great. The minute you said electrons, I started to smile, because they don't talk about biochemistry in terms of the way it really happens, which happens to be, like you said, it's an electrophysiological event that goes on when you get nourished. And they make it much more about proteins, carbohydrates, fats, you know, these big macro things, and they try to manipulate the diet based on that because they could attach that to, you know, the food chain. And then this movie Food Inc. comes out that talks about the lobbying that goes on around the preparation and delivery of food and the way that the Beltway down in Washington protects these companies the way they used to protect the tobacco companies. So maybe we're on the verge between Mad Cow and all these other things of having a revolution about this, so that the next generation doesn't have to spend, you know, 20 years putting all this toxic stuff into their bodies and getting addicted to it, and realizing that if we learn this stuff right, if we can objectively make a call here, we don't have to fight the system. We just change the system. So how do you see, you know, that going on when there's so many other factors other than diet that influence, you know, a person's path toward an alkaline lifestyle?
Yeah, well, you know, I see it as the only pathway. I mean, it's the pathway that leads to health, energy, and vitality. I see that we need to change our focus. I mean, when I say change the focus away from carbohydrates, proteins, and fats, we need to focus on educating, empowering individuals about how to take care of their bodies, how to maintain its alkalinity. We need to give them the education and the simple ways to test, which do not cost a lot of money, to be able to test their pH, to be able to understand, you know, what the urine pH represents and how they can manage their health by just a simple biological test of, you know, maintaining the pH of the urine at 7.2 or greater, by understanding that the most single important part of a healthy swimming pool is the pH and the ORP, by understanding the most important thing for marine life is maintaining the alkalinity of the ocean at 8.3, and as we see it declining from 8.3 to 8.2 by its absorption of carbon monoxide and carbon dioxide, which is changing the biochemistry of the ocean, that we're seeing, you know, sick fish, we're seeing the deterioration of the coral calcium in the ocean because it's literally, you know, using up, the coral calcium is being used up to neutralize the acids that it's absorbing, and thus we're seeing the destruction of the coral reefs, you know, in Australia and other places around the world. And this is the same thing. That's on the macro world. On the micro world, we're actually seeing it happen at the cellular level, you know, and people's bones are basically breaking down in order to maintain the alkaline design of the most important organ of the body, and that's blood, to maintain its delicate pH of 7.365, and the pH is the most important factor to health. It's more important, you know, as far as a monitoring factor, and doctors don't monitor this thing. They don't understand it. They haven't been taught in medical school. This is something you don't read in the books other than just, you know, the scientific, you know, points of, you know, this table of 1 to 14, you know, and different points as it relates to specific pHs of different foods or what our different body fluids are. But, you know, how does the food interact in our body? And so the last 30 years what I've been doing is I've actually been correlating what you eat and what you drink and how it impacts the pH of the body fluids, how it impacts the quality of the blood. And I've done this, you know, with 40,000 different patients in 72 different countries, over 500,000 samples, you know, and when I submit a paper to a scientific journal, they say, thank you very much, but we're not accepting this type of paper at this time, but very, very interesting, and see you later, Jack.
You pat you on your head, yeah. I mean, it's amazing. You just said, I'm just going back in my head, you said 1,000 things that lit up for me, but looking at blood, as an organ, as a system, you know, that basically is delivering nutrients and moving waste, no different than you look at bone, you know, as an organ that's in this matrix too. And then the fact that the premise of allopathic medicine, going all the way back to Galen, you know, four humors and stuff like that, is basically about dumping stuff into the bloodstream. And here these guys don't even know, like, their home turf. They just think they can chemically manipulate it.
Well, the problem is, it's like someone trying to got access to the Bible in the Dark Ages, and it was illegal to read the Bible because there was something in there that you might learn that may be beneficial to you, or, you know, only the priest could do that. So what we have is we have the same scenario going over with blood. So, you know, anything to deal with blood, it's so.
Uh-oh.
Hello. Anyway,
I'm
back. So
I'm
what
here.
I'm saying is blood is a great secrecy. You know, it's, you know, games are stopped, you know, when there's blood dropped on the basketball court. I mean, there's such a secrecy around the blood. Nobody wants to talk about it. No one wants to deal with it. It's really not understood. And so there's this big secrecy around this critical, most important organ that is the most important organ in the human body, this living, flowing river of life, which needs to be understood by people, and how to maintain its alkalinity and its major function. And really, folks don't understand this. The major function of the blood is not just to deliver oxygen or deliver nutrients or to remove cellular waste. Its major purpose of the blood is to become new body cells. Let me explain. I mean, when you cut yourself, what flows there? The blood. What does the blood become? It becomes the scab. What does the scab become? It becomes the skin. I mean, you see this process of blood becoming skin cells. See, people don't put this together, one plus one. Blood, you know, flows to any part of your body that's injured or needs regeneration. So for example, if you're building muscle, you don't build it with protein. See, that's the illusion. You build it with blood. The quality of the blood determines the quality of the muscle. And people don't know how to build healthy blood. You don't build it, you know, with protein. You build it with the foundational elements that contain these high concentrations of biophotons that are carried in chlorophyll molecules, which act as the carriers of light that literally are the blood builders of our body. And so, you know, this was something that I discovered early while looking at the blood, that those who had diets that are high in green vegetables and green fruit had healthier blood than those that were eating animal proteins and dairy products.
Mm-hmm.
And when those people got off the proteins and the high complex carbohydrates and the dairy products, and even the grains for that matter, and started moving more towards, you know, 9 to 12 servings of green fruit and green vegetables like avocados, cucumbers, broccoli, you know, and all the, you know, spinach and all the green ones, all of a sudden the blood constitution started to change. Their whole body started to shift. Everything started to shift because the blood was shifting. That's the key. The key is in the blood. Healthy blood will, you know, equate out to a healthy body. But most people don't know how to build healthy blood, and they don't understand this most important part, and this is where science is just starting to catch up with me, that healthy blood is made in the crypts of the small intestine. So anything that we focus on has to deal with bringing health to the small intestine, which is the root system of our body, which is where stem cells are actually made. And it's not made out of chicken. It's not made out of beef. It's not made out of pork. It's not made out of yogurt. It's not made out of cheese. It's made out of foundational elements that are found primarily in green fruit and green vegetables. And I see this whole transformation takes place at the cellular level. So I can, you know, somebody says, well, you know, what do you think about this food or what do you think about that? Or, you know, I'll look at different diets. So I've looked at the way Chinese eat. You know, I've traveled there. I've been there. I've lectured there. I've, you know, to Japan, to Australia, to India, to all through Eastern Europe, you know, to Russia, all over. It doesn't matter where it is. You know, I've looked at the blood of every culture, every people, and there's only two blood types I've discovered, the two blood types.
Two.
Sick, that's
not sick. Sick and not sick, or
what? This is it. These are the two blood types, healthy and unhealthy. There's no other blood type. You know.
See, you know, I'm smiling most of the time while you're talking here because it this is not as complex and as intricate as what is the things you're saying. And you know, I started thinking, I started scribbling words down like piezoelectric effect and Sangreal and all these heady topics about what actually what living blood is like. If people understood that, then they would think twice before they threw that as you're saying these toxic elements into the system. But the cognitive part of it is so intricate too, because you're dealing with blood brain barrier, you're dealing with the way that the brain repairs itself, and all these things that are transformational about the blood. And your work, you've actually, you know, that polymorphism stuff that you've illustrated actually on your blog and on your site,
right?
That must make the average, and maybe you guys have seen it if you guys are listening, you know, that like live blood cell analysis stuff that Denise does in her place down there on Organic Avenue. When you see the way the world works, it's like seeing the bottom of the ocean. You know, the fish look a little funky down there. When you see the way that all the blood components interact, and the things that you're talking about, especially when it comes to hemoglobin, the transmutation that goes on with hemoglobin between magnesium and iron, all these other things, it's magical. It really is an alchemical environment that the traditional map doesn't really have on. You know, it doesn't show up on that map. So of course they don't value it. They don't have any use for it, because if they understood that a living system has a heck of a lot more going on than meets the eye, and what they've done is they've made it like just like classical physics. Classical physics for years ignored things like friction and all, because it didn't fit the math. And what you're talking about doesn't fit the map that they've come up with. And what we've seen is more chronic illness, more disease. More of this stuff propagate. I don't know if it's just so much to do with diet as it's to do with the thought process that says you're a machine, and the blood is basically, like you said, like the heart's a pump, and the blood is just there to just kind of relay stuff around, and it's just this fluid, you know, system that same way they treat the lymphatic system, which is another whole discussion. But I'm just saying, how do you get past that
communal sense of ignorance. It's almost like you're talking about a round earth and they're talking about a flat earth, and it's like, how do you get people to understand this without having them go through the experience themselves? It's almost as if you'd have to set up a live blood cell analysis on every street corner, and even then, seeing it wouldn't be enough. I just don't know what the threshold experience is to get people to understand how much of an influence they have, how much of constant biofeedback they have with their own body, and especially within their own blood, because as I've had other people on talking about things like NLP, you anchor somebody in an NLP process and get them to think about something that makes them feel more coherent, more safe, you'll see, you know, a change in the way that the volume of white blood cells, red blood cells. How do you get them to understand this sort of, like I said, this alchemical environment that they're living in inside themselves, and they could basically kind of green themselves and make an environment that's sustainable? I'm looking for that, you know, what's going to flip the switch for them to get them to say, okay, I'll let myself be my experiment of one, and I'll try this.
Yeah, well, and we've done this over and over again, and the experiment of one is very powerful when someone has the opportunity to see exactly the state of their blood and how their lifestyle and dietary choices is impacting it. I mean, that's the whole purpose of using phase contrast or dark field microscopy and bright field is when we're showing someone the blood, it's not to diagnose some specific disease, you know, because that's the illusion. I mean, the illusion is the dis-ease, but that's just the symptom. It's not the cause. When they actually see with their own eyes the quality of their blood, the quality of the internal environment, it's just like looking at a polluted body of water. I mean, it's obvious. I mean, when you see polluted water, you say, yeah, that's polluted. I mean, when you look at your blood, you say, yes, you know, that's a polluted environment. I guess, you know, all this pizza and beer isn't working for me. You know, yeah, I guess it isn't working for you. And I guess the drugs aren't working. No, they don't work. I don't know of a drug that works. The best drug is the right water, you know, the right exercise, you know, the right types of alkalizing foods, you know, the right state of emotion, you know, to stay and maintain alkalinity, you know, not only deals with the physical aspects but also the emotional aspects. So all of that together, you know, impacts the quality and the quantity of the blood, and it can also be not only qualitatively shown, but it can be quantitatively shown. So when someone was saying, yes, well, you know, how can I quantify this? I see the blood, it's not healthy, you know, it's in a state of pollution, and yes, you can go and have a CBC, you can have, you know, a liver panel, you can have, you know, test cancer markers tested, and these quantitative tests will always corroborate with what we're seeing in the live blood and the dry blood. But that picture impregnates on someone's mind, saying, "Look, you know, I mean, it motivates them in many ways, you know, to bring them to the reality that what they're eating, what they're drinking, and how they're thinking is really impacting the quality and the quantity of their life." And by seeing that, motivates them then to make lifestyle and dietary change. It's a matter of education and empowering the individual, you know, what they haven't seen to see, to open up their eyes, you know, to the reality of the blood and how important it is, and then to visualize that, to qualify quantitatively, you know, show them, and then to quantify that using even traditional medical tests, functional medicine. Functional medical tests, and to see those, and if someone's got a red blood cell count that's lower, if they've got high platelet counts, or if their chemistry is off, they see the chemistry and the sodium's off. I mean, you can see that in the blood. You can see all these imperfections visually, and you don't have to wait for something that comes down the road, you know, a few days or a few weeks, and you know, really not understand this sheet of paper that your doctor says, well, you're low in this and you're high in that, and you know, you need this drug or that drug. I mean, you can visualize this thing in less than 30 minutes. You can actually see the quality of your blood, the quality of your health. Your health is going to mirror the quality of that blood, and it's very, very empowering. But here again, you know, if I'm saying this is the Holy Grail and, you know, the pathway to health, energy, and vitality, the powers to be don't want you to see it, because once you see it, then you know the fraud that's going on and has been perpetuated in the whole medical and health system.
Yeah, I think, like, if this is going to happen the way you're relaying it, there will be, at a certain point, there will be sort of a reckoning, as it were, very similar to what happened, you know, on Wall Street in the last half of last year, when all of a sudden we realized that, you know, the banks were doing this and the economy went kaboom. Now, in the midst of the health reform that's attempting to be, sort of started, I guess, down in Washington, if you're saying that their very concepts of what health is measured by and tracked by are so just completely erroneous, how can you ever get a health system, that's going to curb in the cost, that's going to have an effective impact on people's lives from cradle to grave, and it's going to empower the individuals? You say when their base materials, their raw materials, are so basically, you know, irrelevant to getting that outcome.
Well, that's why this country doesn't need a health insurance policy. We don't need to insure every person in America with health insurance. The reason why is because the health insurance that you're getting is the wrong kind of health care. Maybe accident insurance, yes. You know, I mean, if you break a leg or if you cut yourself and you need stitches, but for health care, this you don't need health insurance. You may need an accident policy, but those dollars saved by, you know, yes, taking out a lower-cost accident policy and saving the money from the health insurance premiums and then putting that back into prevention and then education, you know, educating each person, not only in the U.S. but around the world, how to maintain the alkaline design of their body, then what we see is we see diabetes coming down. We see heart disease, you know, reversing. We see less cancer because we now know the foods that are going to acidify our bodies and make us sick and tired. We know the foods and the lifestyles that are going to alkalize our body, and we move to that. And, you know, our family doesn't get sick. We don't have health insurance. We don't need health insurance. You know, we need education, you know. So I've educated my children, you know. I educate my client patients, you know, how to take care of their bodies, you know, and how important it is to maintain that alkaline design through, you know, proper exercise, you know, proper breathing, you know, you do this on a daily basis, proper ingestion of the right kinds of alkaline foods and drinks, you know, good healthy fats, meditation, spiritual reconnection,
Those things are great for, like I said, if you introduce it early on, and I always think a lot of times we do a lot with social conditioning on the show, is that, especially when it comes to food choices, I always say your diet and your vocabulary are sort of, it's sort of second order cybernetics in a way, because you get them from your external environment. You get the food choices and your word choices from the people that raise you. Now, if they're getting information from someone like you, of course they're going to be much more at an advantage than someone who goes to the traditional, you know, Western lifestyle and then has to go through the unlearning. Denise Murray told her story about how chronically, you know, ill she was, and she lost, you know, family members to disease like this, and she took action early on and didn't even discover that she was, you know, quote unquote, a vegan. It's like discovering you're a Vulcan until she was well into her teens and 20s. And it's like, do we have to sacrifice, you know, almost a quarter of people's lives in basically trying to unlearn a bunch of things that are just not going to work for them, rather than get this thing, you know, I would say prenatal care, things like that. Do you find inroads in these areas? Because people are searching for answers 24/7, and
yeah.
I just see, if you go through the last 10 years, now you've been doing this research for 25, 30 years, you say?
That's correct. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now, in those 25 or 30 years, we've seen the Atkins diet, okay, we've seen the South Beach diet, Dr. Phil had a diet for a while, I don't know what the hell he was doing, but, you know, and then you've seen some other ones come up, you know, that like rotation diets and the ones for allergies.
Eat for your blood type diet.
Yeah, Diadamo. Okay, now Diadamo is someone who's a friend of mine. He was right down the road here. And he's a diligent guy just like you, did a lot of his research too. Now, when I have him on the show and I ask him about, you know, Atkins and these other guys, he goes back to his basis, which is lectins and things like that, and the anthropology behind diet. Now, if someone who's out there who's gotten results in his system, just like someone who's gotten results in Atkins eating a bunch of steak and bacon, which is always amusing to me, or the Zone Diet guy was around for a while, you're type O, and you've, you know, you're lowering your risk for heart disease and cancer, according to Diadamo's work, and you're eating this you know, animal-based protein diet, you're taking out the starches and all the things he recommends. Now, he walks into your lab or your clinic, and he's told he's killing himself.
That's correct. So, that's exactly what he's doing. I'm a type O, and yes, that's exactly right. His bowels are going to be messed up. He's going to have damage to the intestinal villi. He's going to be constipated or congested. He's going to show irregular red blood cells, a condition called anisocytosis. He's not going to have healthy blood. There's going to be crystallizations. He's setting himself for short-term benefits and long-term health damage. And like I said earlier, there's only two blood types, healthy
right.
and unhealthy. And there's only one way to get healthy, and that's through an alkalized lifestyle and diet. And I have never seen any program out there that where people have come, whether it be Atkins, South Beach, the Eat for Your Blood Type, you know, the coconut diet, the grapefruit diet. You know, the focus has to be on what do I eat to build healthy blood. I don't care if you're an Eskimo. I don't care what nationality, what culture you're from. We all have the same stuff running through us, and the same components to build that blood are critical. And I find that the most important thing to build healthy blood, and I refer to this as the COWS program, is the C stands
right.
for chlorophyll. Chlorophyll
mm-hmm.
is probably the most significant molecule that we can put into our bodies that has some relationship, some conversion factor that seems to convert from its molecular state to our molecular state, so the blood of the plant becomes our blood. But I see those changes happen. But the O stands for oil. Oil, of course, we know that fats are significant for building the lipid membranes. The W stands for water, the right kind of water, the alkaline water. You know, when we're born, we're 90% water. Most
mm-hmm.
of us are dehydrated at 70%, but we're still alive, but barely in some ways. But we need to increase hydration with the right kind of water. And the biggest mistake people are making is they're eliminating salt out of their diet. That's the S. Salt, our tears, our sweat, our blood is all salty. You know, we have the same salt concentration as a fish. You know, and what I see in anyone who's sick, and using functional medical testing, using a chemistry, and looking at specifically the sodium and the chloride ions, those are traditionally always low in anyone who's dealing with an acute or chronic illness. Always low. People are starving for salt. They're on these salt-free diets, which are killing them. You know, could you imagine?
So someone with hypertension still needs salt.
That's correct. Could you imagine putting the ocean fish on a salt-free diet?
Right. Well, like I said, it's fundamental. See, like I said, I'm now holding the bridge of my nose. It's sold to me as, it's not that it's ABC simple. It's like, but it is fundamentally sound thought. If you break out of the mindset that you've been given and start fresh with agreeable facts, and you started out talking about electrons and talking about that there's an electrochemical reaction going on in the system that has to maintain these gradients in order to maintain the pHs. And that's where these things are happening, down there at a very micro level. And then when you get up to behavior and you get up to culture and you get up to these other things, like you said, you expanded it all the way up to the oceans and the way the ecosystem's working on the planet. So there's no scale that we've been on here in the last 45 minutes or so that your basic premises haven't shown up to say, here's how, you know, it's almost like, you know, here diagonally. It's like you've connected a lot of dots for us. I'm just saying that I see a lot of people trying to do the right thing, trying to do, you know, they go to the doctor and they're told,
okay, you're going on beta blockers and you got hypertension, you know, you got to lay off the table salt, right? Now, are you telling them they should load up on the table salt, which would be, you know,
in the mind
with the cardiologist, they would go crazy.
No, I'm telling them to get off their acid. I'm trying to get people off their butts. But
mm-hmm.
I can't do this. But I don't have enough time. But I don't have enough money. But my spouse won't do this. But, you know, this program's too difficult. But. I'm telling people to get off their fat butts. Okay? You know, and I'm telling them to get off their acid, you know. No, you get off your acid and you get on the salt. Doctors aren't
mm-hmm.
saying that. Get off the meat. Get off the chicken. Get off the pork. Get off the dairy. Get off the cheese. Get off all the acidic fluids, the beer, the wine. And then, yes, what your body needs is not wine. You're not wine deficient. That's what causes wine flu. Swine flu. It's wine flu now.
Well,
but wine flu, the whiner's flu, you know, emotional states. This is what causes these conditions, you know. So what we have to focus then on is what are those things that are going to build a healthy, strong, vibrant body. Now, there's a lot of people that want help. They're seeking for health,
mm-hmm.
but there's only a handful of people willing to do what it takes to have it.
Right. This is the big bridge for me is, you know, I'm just trying to get people to breathe and move okay. You know, they can't even do that or move their eyes correctly without, you know, to screw up their posture. Just simple things for my somatic little, you know, playground over here. But what you're talking about is a radical change in the way a human being lives their life. And the social part of existence, you know, I've seen it here, especially the holistically intended types. That, you know, they've taken the chocolate out of the kid's diet. Maybe they've taken the casein out of the kid's diet. The kid can't go to a birthday party. The kid can't go to a family celebration. Kid feels a little stigmatized. And then you see these kids, these wheezing kids on the soccer fields and stuff, and it's like, you know, the kid can't have dairy, can't have ice cream. What happens is that from a parenting standpoint, you're almost made out to be a villain. You know, in the culture, and because you're taking the kid out of the direction, how do you get past those obstacles when you're dealing with, you know, almost like you're excluding yourself and from participation in things that would have emotional benefit, but they have such a chemical consequence.
Yeah, and so that's where my wife.
That's a big shady tree everyone hangs out under.
Yeah, well, that's where my wife comes in, Shelley, and. And trying to figure out ways to take food and prepare it in a way that's not only looks good, but it's also good and it's fun to eat. And
mm-hmm.
and we're working with a lot of children with some very serious illnesses. I mean, type 1 diabetes. It's not every day that you know you hear of a doctor who's reversing type 1 diabetes, but we're doing that. And the reason
mm-hmm.
why we're doing that is not only do we have a program that are helping children so that they don't have to take insulin, but we're making it fun, you know, we're educating, you know, especially for children, they need new heroes, you know. So the end of, you know, the McDonald's clown, you know,
mm-hmm.
And here comes Doc Brock and his sidekick, the Alvarado Kid. I mean, it's a matter of shifting heroes for kids. Rather,
mm-hmm.
you know, rather than the, you know, the traditional cereal, you know, heroes that we kind of grew up like with Captain Crunch.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Captain Crunch, you know, is going to make you sick. It's going to make you tired, and you know, and you know, in the different combinations of food, you know, for children and what they're eating, you know, doing a significant amount of damage to the small intestine could lead to type 1 diabetes. So. You know, the new hero then becomes Doc Brock. It becomes Alvarado Kid. It becomes Luscious Lettuce for the girls, you know. And they have to have new heroes, and they have to have educated reasons why they're doing this. And especially for children who don't have the energy they want, they can't play like they used to, you know, and they're going to their parents and going, Mom, I don't feel good, you know. I'm sick, you know. You know, why do I feel this way? And, you know, why do I have to have all these medical tests, and why do I have to have this insulin, and for a child to be able to shift this, and understand there is a different way. You do not have to be diabetic. You do not have to be sick. You know, you don't have to live with this idea that you're going to be taking insulin or have a fanny pack, you know, in case, you know, you have to shoot up, you know, you have to carry, you know, drugs with you, you know, 24/7,
or
to have a mother have to stay up at night and wake, you know, just to listen to the child's breathing to see whether or not the child stopped breathing or has gone into a coma. I mean, this is craziness, and it doesn't have to happen. And the reason, you know, once you understand the principles of maintaining alkalinity of the body, and if you're willing to ask yourself these questions, are you willing to learn what is required to have the type of health and wellness that you're seeking? Are you willing to do what it takes? You know, I was talking to a 7-year-old child asking these questions. Are you willing to do what it takes? I will do whatever I need to do because I want to feel good. You know,
I agree with you that that'd be a strong right. There's just like I said, with such a culture of immediate gratification, instant gratification, constant gratification, that there's a tremendous social sacrifice that a child and a family would have to make. And you know, I'm just thinking of my own 13-year-old daughter who just gets stigmatized because she doesn't take any over-the-counter medications and never had a vaccine. And you know, it used to be like, you know, it made her feel a little weird. Now she feels like, you know, these guys are just soft. They need all that stuff. They lean on all that stuff because they got used to it, they, you know, taking pills, potions, and lotions when they were babies. And so when her class sits through Super Size Me or Fast Food Nation as a movie in health class, and they're all sitting there squirming in their chair, she's sitting up and she's like, yeah, this is stuff I already knew. So a movie comes out like Food Inc. now, which is getting a little bit to the point where, like I said, I think the solution is what you just said, is that if we start holding the system accountable, and like they did with tobacco, and it took, 64, I guess, was Surgeon General, it's taken a long time to get that one across. I just think we're always going to have a society that's going to, you know, find a way to get high, find a way to get intoxicated, find a way to get wasted. It's much, much more, what are you going to do in the middle? I always talk about with clients that you always got three things going on. You got balance, imbalance, and transition. Now, you can't live in balance all the time, and you can't live in imbalance all the time, but you can definitely stand to have more balance in your life if you can make the transition back and forth. And most people are content to live in with a lot of, you know, chronic imbalances until they get to the point where they go tilt, and then they have the chronic disease, or they have the things you're talking about, where they're raising kids that are sick before they even knew what the heck it was like to be healthy. They don't know what it's like to get well because they never had that. So I think what you're trying to get across here is you've done a tremendous amount of work on your own, upstream like a salmon swimming upstream against the tide here. When are you going to get some friends? I mean, these guys making these movies should be, you know, your best friends.
Well, you know, they should be. And I've seen all those movies. And
you've seen Food Inc.? You've seen Food Inc. since it came out? Wow.
Yeah. And they, you know, they're very supportive to this whole ideology that if you ask the question, do you think that lifestyle and diet has an impact on your health and well-being? And everybody would answer that, well, you know, logically, of course. Okay, well, what are you doing, you know, to make the necessary changes to have the quality of life that you're seeking? You know, and are you willing to make the changes? Are you willing to learn what you need to do in order to have that type of health and wellness? And most people say yes. And the next question, are you willing to commit yourself, and are you willing to start today? You know,
yeah.
Are you just going to procrastinate it, you know? So, you know, that's what it really takes. Someone with a conviction to make a commitment to change. You know, these are the people that we see pH miracles happening that I refer to in our books. You know,
mm-hmm.
we've done case studies. We've done controlled blinded studies. And we have universities that want to do studies. It's a matter of funding and getting, you know, people to give the money that's necessary to do large studies. I was just on with Dr. Cousins, you know, because he's having very similar success that I am with type 2 diabetes. Of course, he's working more with type 2. I'm working more with type 1, but I work with both. We have a 94% success rate in reversal on type 2, and we have an 83% success rate on type 1.
Shouldn't that be front page news? Shouldn't that be on the Today Show every other day?
It should be, but I'm not one of the advertisers.
Right. I'm just saying, it just seems like to me, at a certain point when you've got all these cases, I mean, you 70,000 cases, 40,000 cases in how many countries? It just seems like, because I kind of grew up listening with one ear to people like Gary Null, who is it's almost like it's redundant. He says a lot of things that are you know, radical and they have, you know, basically almost a militant type of tone to them. Yet he's not speaking an untruth. It's just that he's shouting against the howling wind against him that there's never going to be enough proof. Because the one tryptophan case about 20 years ago, you know, they took it off the market. And yet how many drugs have come and gone that have ravaged the country, and they just keep coming up with a new one. And so it just seems like, and you guys, I mean, I don't know, you guys have nerves of steel to put up with, I mean, I'm just, you know, from the chiropractic standpoint, we're not even on the radar as far as dealing with resistance from the mainstream. When you have this much information and these many lives you've impacted, and these top 10 diseases that you're arresting and reversing, I can't fathom how you don't get the attention from, because the media loves to poke holes in things. I can't imagine that somebody out there wouldn't say, you know what? This has gone on long enough. I've got to get this information some light, because people are, I mean, as much as we're dealing with stress that's not from our own doing, you know, all the things that are going on in the world around us, but these are things that we can take control of, the kitchen table wisdom here, and get out of the circular process of just keep inflicting epigenetically every generation with the same process. I just, it frustrates me hearing you work so hard. And because you're not an advertiser, as you say, because you're not gonna be there for the commercials, because you're gonna do a nice 15-minute spot on a Today Show or something like that, and they're gonna go three commercials for drugs and two for Viagra, right back to the same old regularly scheduled programming. It just seems like it's gonna take you, getting to the point where you get somebody in the high profile realm. Well, like I talked about with Denise, you know, she mentioned that there's a lot of people in Hollywood that come into her shop and promote her stuff and make it sexy to be part of Organic Avenue, make it attractive to lure in the teenagers who are questioning things, who maybe, you know, they want to go homeopathic rather than going to the over-the-counter drugs for things that are self-limiting, so they're not putting more residue in their body. Little things like that leads to, you know, that sort of Twitter effect where people start talking, hey, you know what? We found another way here. We're not going to rely on the system. The system doesn't educate us well. It damn sure doesn't protect us from much. And it's not looking out for our well-being at all. In fact, it's exploiting every weakness we could possibly conjure up. Why are we relying on it? We have to be aware of it, but why would we ever rely on this thing? And that's why, you know, for me, the radical point is vaccines. You know, that caused my kids to be, you know, stigmatized for years. And it's when you get something like this dopey swine flu come out, and they're talking about vaccinating people again, making it mandatory, just like we had in, with the anthrax scare and everybody running around, you know, putting all that junk in their lungs, and we just ate a little more garlic that week, and, you know, it was a natural antibiotic, and it was like, okay. It just seems like there's a chronic fear of the environment, that the environment is out to get you. You have to overprotect yourself, and then this interior environment, that's what you're talking about, we undersupport.
Right.
It's like a crazy seesaw, you know, that doesn't have the fulcrum in the middle. So as we kind of close the program here, because I there's so many things I could ask you, but what is the main misconception that people have upon hearing about your work? Is it the fact that they think it's all raw food? Is it the fact that they think it's just limited to diet? Because you talk a lot about lifestyle, you talk about emotions and things like that are also part of an alkaline lifestyle. What is it that people don't know about your work that caused them to get a bad read on you and kind of miss the bus?
Well, they think it's just about pH. You know, they don't.
Okay.
They don't really get the whole picture of, you know, that we're not spiritual, you know, physical beings having a spiritual experience. We're organization of light energy, or spiritual beings having a physical experience. You know, it's about organization of light. It's about electrons and protons. It's about energy. It's about how atoms, even just recently, how they can literally change on the atomic level. And now science is seeing that even at temperatures at 0 degrees Celsius, that transformations can take place, that chemical reactions can happen, that you don't need heat, you know. And so this is the latest discovery, and I've been talking about this for years, you know, because we've got transformations taking place with cells, you know, one cell going from one form to another form based upon the environment. Everything is sensitive to the electromagnetic environment in which this matter lives, that it can organize and disorganize, take on different forms based upon that environment. And so they really don't understand the scope, and those who catch a glimpse of it, and just simply how I've summarized it after 30 years of research, it really comes down to two premises. And the first premise is that the human body is alkaline by design, and the second premise is that all functions of the body are acidic, and that if we understand how to maintain the alkaline design of our bodies, that we can maintain the quality and quantity of our life, you know, theoretically and definitely, but we do not have to suffer any acute or chronic illnesses. We don't have to fear cancer. We don't have to fear diabetes. We don't have to fear bugs, you know, that's been, you know, promulgated by, you know, the Pasteurian theory and the germ-phobic doctors mm-hmm. that are out there and scientists, that germs don't cause disease, you know. Acidic ideas and lifestyles and diets are what cause disease, and we literally have control over the quality and quantity of our life. And the consequences that we experience, whether they be health or vitality, or whether they be sickness or disease, are within our control. And every day we sit down to the banquet of the consequences of our choices, and we realize it is choice that determines the quality and quantity of our life, you know, and that, you know, we have to protect free agency. We have to protect ourselves, whether we agree with vaccination or not agree with it. We still have to protect the right to choose. And there are people that say, no, I don't want to do this. They should have the right to do that. Just like this boy that's been mandated to have chemotherapy because his rights have been taken away from him. He should be able to choose as well as his parents. No, we do not want this. We want something different. We should not have this free agency taken away. And this is what's happening in this country. We are losing our agency. We are losing the right to choose. And this we have to fight for. We have to fight for freedom of choice to be able to choose the type of care that we choose, and not to be mandated by some judge or some court, but we choose, you know, individually we choose the type of care. Now that's not available in most of the states. It's only available in about 6 states in the union, and California is one of those that has a Freedom Act that allows people to choose the type of care that they want.
Well, they've tried in some of these states to separate. So in New York, they have it pending too, but to separate the practice of medicine from the practice of healing, and say you can't regulate the practice of healing. And these choices, like you're saying, are part of that. And they chased that kid down and his family down like they were criminals for refusing the allopathic intervention and saying I want to go another way. But the fact of choosing an alternative, he was treated as a pariah. Like, you know, and the parent was treated as basically an unfit mother. And they stigmatize. They make an example of the kid so that the next 10 families won't even think to try it because look at the attention these guys got, you know. So, I mean, if you want to get a look at Dr. Young, he's going to be down in New York City, I guess, was it Saturday, Sunday, or is it Friday, Saturday? I'm not sure.
We have a presentation, a retreat on Saturday and Sunday. You know,
Saturday and Sunday. Yeah, down at the Lighthouse International, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And Denise Murray from Organic Avenue is going to be there feeding you and sponsoring it. So you can go to organicavenue.com and look that up. And I think there's some spots left. But, you know, you can go to phmiracleliving.com for more of Dr. Young's work. And I really thank you for this time. You were a joy to talk to, and you really kind of like flattened down a couple of molehills for me that will take me out the door tomorrow to help people out and direct people to things like you're doing. Because, like I said, you can only put the information in front of people and hope they act on it. That's the choice. That's the synapse we have to all cross. And as long as you're there on the other side, you know, the trapeze, people are in good hands. So thanks for joining us tonight on Some Time.
Thank you for having me on your show. All the best to you.
Take care now.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Wow, covered a lot of ground there.
had a couple more questions, but you know what? He gave me a lot to think about. I might just email him and see if I can get those answers, because I deal a lot with salivary pH, and I know in his text he talks about it as 7.2 as being the target, and in my little literature research it's 6.2, but 6.8, I just get a little nuts with this pH stuff, is what it really should be in its natural habitat, but 6.2 is the clinical norm, and I'll bore you with that, Fakakta, forget about it. But anyway, a lot of principles to think about tonight, a lot of things that to consider, and like I said, Dr. Young's work is, to me, it's beyond reproach. I'm going to go trailing it back over the hill to bring D'Adamo here. Maybe we'll have D'Adamo and Dr. Young on sometime to discuss this like rational scientists. I love when rational scientists get together. You know, but, you know, sometimes you have to deal with a lot of ignorance and a lot of arrogance and a lot of ego when it comes to this kind of stuff. And, I mean, he's borderline Copernicus. He's you know, can you imagine being Copernicus? You think the Earth's the center of the universe, and someone says, oh, it's the sun, and they kill him. You know, that's the way we are around here. Like, don't change the program. He's changing the program. See, there's a little clip from Idiocracy, if it will play, that will sum up my thoughts for the evening.
Brenda's got look sensitive. Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know? It's what they used to make Brando.
Yeah, but why did they use them to make Brando?
Because Brando's an electrolyte.
There you go. So, Idiocracy is the movie. You know, that pretty much sums up my thoughts for what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with a lot of people unwilling to listen to almost any argument that involves them making positive, lasting changes in their life, because it's scary. And, like, you know, when you're addicted to something, whether it's ideas, whether it's food choices, whether it's lifestyle habits, you're not going to consider alternatives because those are crutches. They're working for you. They're holding you up. And the short-term gain is always much more tangible than the long-term pain. That's why, you know, when you start to think about a 100-year lifestyle rather than one that's, you know, maybe 100 minutes, the planning gets a little bit more proactive, and you become more of an ecologist of your life rather than, you know, an interventionist. And, you know, they used to say in the old movie Natural Born Killers, I think it was Robert Downey Jr., yes, one of Denise's clients, says at one point, love kills the demon. And I'll say, in this case, physicists beats the chemists. And maybe if we talked about nutrition in terms of the physics of it, like he was, got into electrons and protons, and that's what the chemistry comes out of. So if we get underneath the chemistry and get into the real nuts and bolts of this stuff, this electrophysiological environment, that's like I said, it's a transformational thing. He called blood an organ. Said a lot of things tonight. Think about these things. All right, so next week we're going to have a little vacation from all this detailed stuff. We're going to go look at personality, and hopefully we'll get our guest Arlene Taylor on to talk about personality development and how we can deal with our individual differences and find some common ground here on the somatic terrain. All right, so we're going to take us out with a little Elvis, and I want to thank everyone for listening, and we'll see you again next week at 9 o'clock on July 1st as we get right into the barbecue season here on Summertime. All right, so I'm going to the Met game tomorrow. It's a little pub grub for me at the old Shake Shack. And I will try to think alkaline thoughts while I'm getting a lip lock on a burger. So there you go. That's the way it's going to be. All right, thanks again for everyone for listening, and we will talk to you again next week at 9 o'clock. Be yourself and be well. Travel light, sapiens. Back to home. Listen to this. Do you believe this? Come on, baby.
Oh, what a night. Oh, what a night it was. It really was such a night. Came the dawn, and my heart in the love, and the night begun. But I'll never forget you, the kiss, the kiss in the moonlight. Ooh, such a kiss. It was such a night. It was a night. Ooh, oh, what a night it was. It really was such a night. Came the dawn, and my heart in her love, and the night was gone. But I'll never forget the kiss.
Travel light.